Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Long Game Podcast with myself, Ben Scallon, and Jason Osborne. Today, we're going to be talking about Enoch Burke's rearrest and return to prison. We're going to be, I always call him Elon Burke because I know somebody who always accidentally calls him that. And so that's become a running joke between me and my wife. Enoch Burke, we're going to be talking about the Media Commission and its tech illiterate display of Irish lawmakers trying to regulate the European tech sector despite not knowing what a VPN is and finding out from their niece 5 minutes ago. And we're going to be talking about Trump's apparent impending seizure of Greenland from a NATO ally and what that might mean for Ireland in terms of trade wars and tariffs flying back and forth and all the rest of it. To kick off, Jason, are we going to start with Greenland, I think, was the agreement, because a good old-fashioned inter-Western potential conflict. I saw France was sending troops to Greenland at the request of the locals there, and so Macron is doing the puffing out his chest, Napoleon reincarnated thing, and obviously Trump was going to take very kindly to that, I'm sure. What do you think of all of this?
Oh, it's such a debacle. I'll start by, I think it's the sort of thing people like to hear from podcasters, by saying that I mean, it obviously hasn't played out fully yet, but I think I was right about this and you were wrong, Ben.
Yeah, I was wrong. And even worse than that, you were right. That's the more upsetting part to me. Yeah, unfortunately.
Because we spoke 2 weeks ago when we were chatting about Venezuela and the American intervention there. Admittedly, now you were playing devil's advocate. You weren't stating your position. You were just playing devil's advocate. I think, though, nevertheless, you did find it somewhat far-fetched that I was kind of taking seriously what Trump had to say about Greenland.
Yeah, my exact quote was, I kind of derisively asked, I said, come on, do you really think Trump is going to invade Greenland? Like, that's, and I did frankly think that that was preposterous. And now I think that is less preposterous than I did a couple of weeks ago.
And I mean, I do think that it's obviously up in the air. And I know a lot of listeners will hear us saying, you know, oh, Trump invading Greenland. You two have been drinking the mainstream media Kool-Aid. But I really do not think that's the case. I think I said it 2 weeks ago and I'll say it again today. There's no reason not to take Trump at his word in relation to these things. I mean, he's been very decisive with Iran in terms of strikes previously, although some have sort of been criticizing his rhetoric around Iran recently. He was very decisive in Venezuela, certainly. And he has been talking about Greenland sort of increasingly obsessively over the past couple of months in particular. And he's sort of refusing to rule anything out. And I mean, you can say that it's not serious already at this stage. You could be forgiven for forgetting that last July, the EU and the US struck a trade deal, if you can even call it that. I still don't know what the EU got out of it. They essentially just agreed to pay America a lower tariff rate than America was threatening. But Trump, obviously, on Saturday announced that he was placing tariffs on 8 European countries, that's 7 EU countries, including the UK, because, as you alluded to, they had sent troops to Greenland to take part in this sort of pre-arranged military exercise. Now, the sort of contradictions start here, because Trump claims that America wants Greenland for national security reasons because the Europeans haven't invested in it enough and they refuse to take Greenland's security seriously, which Trump obviously says jeopardizes America.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I believe that part. Like, there is good evidence to suggest that China and Russia and other world powers are interfering with the Arctic region, and I'm sure it would be very strategically useful. That doesn't necessarily justify what he's doing, but I'm just saying, so far, I don't think he's wrong in that particular criticism.
No, that's completely true. I mean, the Arctic is becoming increasingly politically charged. It's been documented that Chinese and Russian activity has increased there, and so obviously America wants in on that, and it's somewhat hindered by Canada being in the way, and again not being in possession of any sort of major territory. I mean, Alaska is the furthest northern territory obviously America has, but nevertheless, if they do believe that Denmark and other European allies weren't doing enough to sort of satisfy America's security desires in relation to Greenland. It's not clear why he's decided to slap tariffs on these countries now that they've started taking Greenland's security seriously. I mean, I imagine they sent these soldiers there for exercises in response to what America was saying. I don't think they were posturing at America, although maybe there was a part of that there, but I do think they were sort of trying to show America, look, we're going to take Greenland more seriously. So you've got all that going on, and that is, according to sort of the statement that Trump put out, the what sort of pushed him in the direction of putting a 10% tariff starting February 1st on these eight countries, which will rise to 25% from June 1st if America doesn't essentially control Greenland at that stage. That threatens to blow up that trade deal from July. Let's not forget, that trade deal last July came in sort of at the last minute to avert a major trade war between Europe and America. Whatever we think about the background politics, trade wars aren't good for ordinary people, either in the US or in the EU, which obviously exchange so much trade between them. There's a decent argument to be made that Europe would be the bigger loser from this, but certainly industries would be hurting America. But all of this is to say that it's already in serious territory here. I mean, certainly if trade war develops, Ireland obviously doesn't have any sort of say in whether or not it can opt in or out of the EU's trade war against America. If the EU decides that it wants to enter a trade war against America over this, Ireland will just be vetoed if it disagrees. And so Ireland stands to be grievously damaged by this, because of all of the European countries, we're possibly the most dependent on trade with America and American foreign investment. So if things do go ugly between Europe and America in this regard, it's going to have a real concrete impact on people in Europe, and obviously we're most concerned about people in Ireland, without a single bullet being fired. Although, as I say, I do take Trump seriously. I think there's plenty of reason to take him seriously based on what he's done and what he's said to this point. And I do think that there's real escalatory potential in all of this, because I do think that this is finally, for the European elites, the straw that threatens to break the camel's back. I mean, the reporting earlier today was that both France and Germany favor using Europe's anti-coercion instruments, which are essentially their economic nuclear bomb that they could use on the US. So it very much
I saw like analysts looking into the potential impact that instrument could have if it was employed on both Europe and America. And the general consensus among a lot of economists seemed to be, we don't really know. You could speculate and you could make some reasonable inferences, but it'd be so unprecedented that it's almost impossible to predict what that would do to Europe and America and the world more broadly. So it's that big of a deal that it's totally uncharted territory.
Yeah, I'd find this really frustrating because the Trump administration put out its national security strategy in either late November, early December. And in it, they were very critical of Europe. And a lot of people, certainly mainstream people, were shocked because they reserved pretty much all of their criticism for Europe and didn't really level any at China or Russia. But people who are dissatisfied in Europe totally understand this, because Europe and America have obviously traditionally been the closest allies. And it's very much the case that you could have plenty of criticisms of America, and indeed I do at the moment. But nevertheless, what the Trump administration had to say about the state of Europe was pretty unerringly accurate. In the national security strategy, they spoke about civilizational erasure. They spoke about threats to European culture. They spoke about the sort of insane demographic decline of Europe, which is completely true. I mean, American demographics are also declining, but we're far more advanced. Many European countries are far more advanced than them. They spoke about the impact of mass immigration on Europe. They spoke about the threats to freedom of expression, which are there for anyone with eyes to see, really, in Europe. But I think this Greenland gambit is such an own goal. because the reason America expended so much, the Trump administration expended so much attention on Europe in this security strategy, which I think was a good security strategy, was because they understand Europe as being their closest ally. And so they wanted to get them into better shape because they thought that in 20 years time, many of these countries would be essentially unrecognizable. And so we can't depend on them as allies. So taking that view, it doesn't make any sense why they would then decide to essentially blow up the bridge between America and Europe, because it seems to me that, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day. I think the European elites are completely correct to reject Trump's desire for Greenland, essentially, primarily if for no other reason than I think it'd be a different story if the people of Greenland wanted to become part of America. And sure enough, I'm sure you could find a couple of them if you wanted to who do. But it certainly seems as though the polling that I've seen and the reactions I've seen, the vast majority of people in Greenland do not want to become a dominion of America. They would much rather remain associated with Denmark. And so it's not there for America's taking. I mean, we've heard the past couple of years about how, you know, Putin has been essentially ostracized for making the same argument in regard to Ukraine. So
if you're sitting at home disagreeing with that, or, you know, like you're pro-Trump, but I would be instinctively, like, I would be more pro-Trump than John McGurk, for example. You know what I mean? Like, I would have voted for Trump without hesitation if I was living in America in 2016, you know, that sort of thing. But you have to try and imagine that it's not Denmark. Imagine it's Ireland. And for some reason, it's kind of hard to make a comparison because we have no possible capability of doing anything about this. But let's say America decided it was strategically useful to them to take Rockall or...
I will just interject here before you keep making this point. They singled out Ireland and Britain in the national security strategy as countries to which they have an exceptional sentimental attachment anyway. So, you know, Greenland is so out of left field, it seems to me, for America to just sort of develop an obsession with. It's not at all, it's sort of thing out of the realms of possibility that America would be like, you know, I don't see America invading Ireland, I'm not saying that, or invading Britain or anything like this, but that they would sort of be thinking Ireland and Britain ought to be taking a more America-centric side in all of this because they're, you know, Anglosphere countries anyway.
Well, yeah, but I just think that it would be crazy to think that just because you like America and you like Trump, let's say, and you think, oh, like, let's say you're a world leader of a country and you like Trump and you think, yeah, what he's doing with immigration is fantastic, what he's doing with anti-wokeness, anti-censorship, blah, blah, blah. I love his agenda. I think he's doing fantastic work over there and I'd love to cooperate more with him. And then he starts talking about taking over part of your country's territory or protectorate of your country. You'd have to be a total bozo and wimp to just sit there and take that. You're forcing me to respond in a hostile way to you, even if I like you, even if I wanted. Because my understanding is that America already has unlimited military access to Greenland through a voluntary agreement on the part of Denmark. Denmark is like, yeah, go ahead, do what you want. You know, we're mates with you. We're allies. We're all in NATO together. We don't have an issue. And so, you'd want to be a total punk to just sit there and watch this guy eating your lunch and you just like let him do it because why, you know, like you. And so, unfortunately, as somebody who is instinctively, I would be more sympathetic to Trump instinctively and I would be more opposed to the European elites instinctively. Even I have to look at this and say Europe is kind of doing what it has to do because you can't just let him do that. Like, you, no matter who it is, you know, you can't just let people take your stuff, you know?
This is why it's such an unbelievable own goal. I agree with everything you said. I mean, I also agree with many points on Trump's agenda. I mean, I think that, as I said, the criticisms of Europe in the national security strategy were all spot on as far as I'm concerned. Now, I think Europe could make a lot of reasonable criticisms of America as well. But nevertheless, if you're dealing with that document, I think a lot of what the Trump administration had to say about Europe was accurate in it. And I think that it's very obvious why so many of the politically dissatisfied in Europe sort of had been looking with longing over to America. But I think that certainly the dissatisfied, the politically dissatisfied, have to be very careful not to allow a sort of contrarianism or a sort of developed reactivity overtake being principled in relation to these things. I think that you're exactly right. Just because you agree with a lot of Trump's points and a lot of what he's done to this point doesn't mean you have to support when he just sort of randomly starts talking about taking Greenland. And, you know, if there were some kind of deep roots to this, or if there's some real clear thinking behind it, I think it would, you know, be easier to argue. But some of the stuff that's coming out about it, I mean, it was reported today, and I know a lot of people, again, will be like, oh, mainstream media, so it's not worth listening to. But it's been sort of confirmed and commented on by enough solid people, it seems to me, that it's worth mentioning. It was reported initially by PBS in America, but it's since been reported on by Reuters, who have seen the letter, and a number of ambassadors who received this letter after it was forwarded to them seem to have confirmed it, that Trump wrote a letter to the Norwegian prime minister in which he was saying that the Norwegian Nobel Committee, who were responsible for designating, I suppose, the Nobel Peace Prize, he was essentially feeling snubbed by that, and that as a result, he's not so concerned, even though he is still concerned with peace, it's not sort of at the top of his list now, and he's more so concerned with doing what's sort of, in his opinion, right and good for America, and in this instance seems to be seizing Greenland. And it's just like, Trump is such a contradiction, certainly in this regard, in that he was always the anti-establishment candidate in America. He was sort of the anti-institutional figure. And yet, no one in the world seems to care more about being recognized by this institution, the Nobel Prize Committee, than him, to the point that he's allowing it to dictate his foreign policy. Right. I mean, it's very, you don't have to support this. I mean, as I say, I think the Trump administration can make a lot of good points about freedom of speech, free expression, about the effects of mass immigration and things like that. That can all be true. And then you can still say, yeah, you're wrong about this, you're wrong about that.
I think one of the problems is it makes it really hard if you're a European conservative political party, let's say, to try and point to Trump as an example of a sort of a pattern that you might want to pursue in your own country when it comes to these good policies that, you know, many of us would agree are worth pursuing. Like, we'd love to see a border crackdown, you know, immigration crackdown or whatever, that, you know, people can dislike those policies and they could say, oh, Trump is bad or he's this or he's that, and they can complain and you can argue the toss with them. But when he starts actually being belligerent towards Europe, then it feels almost treasonous to say, oh, yeah, you know, we should be doing more of what he's doing. Oh, you mean the guy who's threatening other European countries, who's like strong arming us, who's threatening us with economic destruction, where, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of European people could lose their jobs. You mean that guy? You want to be more like him? Where you almost, it damages any right-wing European who might want to see some of the better parts of his agenda implemented this side of the Atlantic. You feel like kind of a jackass saying that to a taxi driver, where you're like, yeah, that's what I want, you know?
No, I think that's exactly right. And I think that, again, one of the broad policy objectives they outlined in the national security strategy in relation to Europe was cultivating resistance to the current trajectory within European nations. The only resistance they're cultivating with things like this is broad nonpartisan resistance to America in general. Mm-hmm. I think that it's amazing the reactions to Greenland. You had Alice Weidel of the AFD coming out and condemning this. You've had Keir Starmer condemning it. You've had Helen McEntee obviously condemning it. It was the strongest, most strongly worded statement, I suppose, that I've seen an Irish leader issue against America. You had a Nigel Farage of Reform UK sort of, now his condemnation was a little milder because there's obviously closer ties between them and the US than there would be between a lot of other parties. Nevertheless, he sort of had to condemn it, nearly obliged to do so. So when you've got all across the political spectrum condemning it in Europe, if you take the position that, you know, whatever Trump does is right in Europe, you're essentially committing political suicide. And what it seems the dissatisfied in Europe ought to be concerned with is what works. It's about actually gaining, you know, gaining some traction, enacting some cultural change. And you don't do that by tethering your cart to the horse that's threatening you.
Yeah. No, it's very unfortunate like you see people online saying that it's 98D tiddlywinks, and like I saw one group of people saying how I saw one post online where people were saying that because he's a New York real estate magnate and he knows how to negotiate and all this stuff, that what he's really doing is he's talking about getting all of Greenland, and then in the end, he's going to pull back and say, okay, I'll just take access to these mines, or, you know, these raw materials that are there, and he'll get it for a fraction of the price because he set the bar so high initially, and then he talked them down or whatever. Like, can I definitively prove that that's not the case? No, but I just, as somebody, again, who is not opposed to him in principle overall, I just find the constant excuses for him as if he's this infallible omniscient demigod, that anything he does, if he shits his pants on stage, he has an accident and he's like limping off stage, that was a distraction to hide from this other thing, and that's why he's actually a genius. Like, he can never just make a bad call, according to some people, which would be quite a bit tedious, you know.
I think that's exactly right, and I think that, you know, well, this broader picture here, I think the sort of cultural change is going to, which is why we named the podcast The Long Game. I think it's a much longer game that, again, I'll put it this way, because I don't like the phrases left or right, as I mentioned on a previous episode. The politically dissatisfied in Europe have to sort of become comfortable with playing. But
sorry to interrupt, but Trump sneezes and snot comes out of his nose. And everybody says that because of the color of the snot, he was showing how healthy he is. That, like, it's the exact shade that an ear, nose, and mouth doctor would tell you it should be. So that's him.
Should be, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That just shows his vitality.
I mean, you know, the point we haven't even made here, obviously, is that I know I'm not an American. I'm not constantly immersed in American political discourse and circles. But I'm fairly certain my understanding is accurate that MAGA was always a non-interventionist movement. And then Trump has obviously sort of gone no holds barred the second time around with, I think this Venezuela action was sort of previously unthinkable from him. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but certainly the stuff with Greenland seemed to me unthinkable. And now you've got all these people who previously were describing themselves as non-interventionist coming out and saying, well, of course, I mean, this is in America's interest. This makes great sense. It always has. In fact, here's America's long history of acquiring territories, and this is perfectly in keeping with that. Again, this is leaving apart the fact that America's acquisition of different states, generally those populations wanted to become part of the U.S., and the powers that were in charge of them were happy enough to hand it over to sell it. Whereas neither of those conditions are satisfied in relation to Greenland. But it's all just to say that, unless people think, again, that we're just sort of drinking the media Kool-Aid and getting up into a panic, this thing has already started. Trump has threatened the tariffs over this. That in and of itself blows up the trade deal from last July, which is already a drastic escalation between America and the EU. Like, that's detrimental to people living in Europe, which I imagine is, it's obviously you and I, Ben, but it's also the vast majority of people in our audience. So it's not all bluster and it's not all mainstream media panic. It's something that's in motion right now. And to my understanding, it's something that's not good for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's, I think, important if you don't want to just be a total sycophant who drops your knees and licks the big dog, as it were. Like, you know, you have to use your common sense. But with that,
I just Just to make the final point, lest people think we're being sort of sycophantic to the European leaders, of course, it should go without saying, and I hope people understand that the European leaders obviously are responsible for allowing things to get to this point. I mean, if Europe had sort of remained strong and economically vibrant, America would never even have been in a position to try something like this. But as was outlined in that national security strategy, and as obvious to everyone with eyes and ears over the past couple of decades, there's been such sort of neglect in every sense that has enabled America to sort of triumph in terms of vitality over Europe, and hence it feels emboldened to do something like this. So European leaders do have this on their hands, essentially.
Yeah, I have more respect for the meniscus on top of sour milk than I do for most European leaders. So that, don't worry if that's your concern, that I'm being too deferential to our betters on the continents. But with that said, we might move on to matters domestic, although there is sort of an American tie-in here, given that they are talking about regulating largely American tech companies. Of course, we had the Communications Committee at the Oireachtas over the last week, who met to discuss the undressing scandal on Grok, the AI platform on Elon Musk's X, where people were asking it to put random unconsenting people in bikinis, including random women and children and so on. And it was doing this. And we discussed that on a previous episode. I don't know if it was last week or the week before. And so we laid out our thoughts on that, and the fact that we are strongly opposed to that and think that it's controversial for a reason, and that, you know, we understand the issues there. So we're not going to relitigate that particular issue. But I did want to talk a little bit about the almost comical tech illiteracy of the politicians who were on this particular committee, because they're talking about taking drastic measures, crazy stuff that would seriously harm our economy. By their own admission, Alan Kelly, who's the chairman of the committee, the Labour Party TD, he said that we should not wait for the European Union to regulate the tech companies. We should just go out on a limb as Ireland and start doing it ourselves. And he said, look, that might have an impact on us economically, I'll admit that, but we have to do what's right. We have to do it anyway, without your Brussels backing. So that if the Europe is, so I mean, America is pretty strong as it is economically, pretty strong is an understatement. Imagine how easily they would crush us like a bug if we were to try and start fiddling with their companies without the approval of Brussels. Like, it would just be a massacre. So this is the kind of stuff that politicians are on. We also had Sinead Gibney of the Social Democrats of Painted Nails fame, who said that she wanted to nationalize the big tech companies, which would cost several trillion euros, I believe. I think the Irish annual budget is in and around 100 billion. So I'm not exactly sure. We maybe check down the back of the couch at Leinster House and we might find a few quid to scrape together for that. But yeah, so we're going to nationalize the companies, and we're going to not turn off the algorithm. We're going to use the algorithm to promote whatever politicians want. You know, you can, the world's your oyster at that point. You can try and encourage it to promote social cohesion, quote unquote, and different ideas that the political class of the day would like people to see. So, I mean, I don't want to do too much of a digression on that, because it really speaks for itself, but it is remarkable how, like, you know, people get accused of all kinds of radical stuff. Like, if you're remotely right of center, you'll have people who'll say, oh, you're a fascist, you're a Nazi, you're this, that, and the other. And it's all nonsense. And then you'll have somebody who's slightly left of center, and people are like, this guy's a communist. He's like Karl Marx or whatever. And you go, yeah, that's not realistic either. He's just like a normal liberal. But in this case, Sinead Gibney is a social democrat. And you give her the mildest whiff of power, and she's talking about nationalizing companies and using them to push state agendas in a, like, an authoritarian left fashion. I just thought that was kind of interesting. And I do want to hear your take on this, so I'm not going to steamroll too long. But lastly,
I was going to say keep going, because I just wanted to Google something, so I wasn't even ready to speak. Keep going. No,
that's fine. I was just going to top it off with the cherry on top of Peter Chapclear, who I've never spoken to in my life. I'm sure he's a lovely man. I did find it comical that he's on this committee talking about the need to regulate tech companies. And he stressed that he discovered a new thing. There's this new technology that he'd just been made aware of called a, I don't know if you've heard of these things, Jason. It's called a VPN. And what it does is it allows you to tell the internet that you're in a different country or a different location to the one you are. And it means you can get around regulations. And so he just found out about this from his niece. His nieces in Australia told him about it. And so he was saying that this is a serious problem and can we do anything about that? Now, if you've just discovered what a VPN is, I'm going to go out on a limb and say you probably should not be regulating the tech sector of a first world European country. I know, I mean, that might be harsh. Maybe I'm being unfair to you, Peter, there, but something tells me you're not really suited to this particular role. So it was quite embarrassing. And I don't say it's embarrassing because tech doesn't need to be regulated or very powerful technologies like AI tools don't need to be regulated. Of course they do. I fully support that. As we outlined on a previous episode, I think that there are common sense restrictions that should absolutely be put on these things. But something tells me these guys aren't the ones to do it. That's just my general feeling about the matter.
The great difficulty is that these are complicated issues. No one denies that there are issues around how societies ought to manage the explosion of information technology, social media, all of the social ramifications these technologies have. That they have ramifications and that many of them are dire is clear. The difficulty is that these are the people who are... You need real intellects, I suppose, to grapple with these problems. And these people aren't that. I wouldn't hire them if I were in charge of a company that was in charge of regulating, coming up with tech regulation or suggesting tech regulation, whatever it may be. What I was Googling there was just because. So I, as our listeners know, we don't need to rehash that I don't live in the country at the moment, but my native constituency is Dublin Rathdown. And I always feel, whenever Sinead Gibney comes up, I always feel a thrill of local pride because she's one of my representatives alongside Neil Richmond. So I'm really well served. But Can I even say this? She must be one of the worst TDs in the country. Like, honestly, if every time she opens her mouth, she says something absolutely insane. I think that, what was the exact quote? Because you reported on last week, she said something like that they could get the algorithm to show whatever we wanted to.
Yeah, she listed a whole load of things. She said we could get it to promote social cohesion or lifelong learning, or and she like listed a couple of things, or whatever we want, it's up to us.
I read your article at the time and I went off and said it to my wife and I said it says so much about the state of the country that a TD feels empowered to say that publicly.
It's
a radical statement that, you know, I feel like if we lived in a healthier democracy, people would be like, what the hell are you talking about? You can't say things like that. And there would have been some sort of, you know, public backlash that would have made her sort of...
There was a lot of backlash to it online. And it reminded me, it had a feeling of when that Green Party senator, what was her name? Began with a P. Do you know who I'm talking about? Blonde hair. Depends. I can see her face now in my head. She lost her
Pippa Hackett?
Yeah. No. Anyway, people at home, you'll remember who I'm referring to because the video got millions of views where she said we need to restrict
Pauline
O'Reilly. That was it.
Yeah.
She said that in the discussion around the hate speech bill a couple of years ago that we need to restrict people's freedom for the common good. And that went internationally viral and everybody was talking about it. It had a real smack of that office where you have a politician talking about seizing the tech companies so we can use the algorithm to push whatever we want. Like, just saying the quiet part out loud. I mean, I'll tell you this one thing. I'll be getting great mileage out of that clip. That's for damn sure as well. Yeah, sorry, you were saying that?
Yeah, so, no, you're right. I mean, pardon me. I did also see the backlash to it online, but for whatever reason, I feel like in a way that doesn't so much apply in other countries, I feel like there's always a disconnect between digital backlash in Ireland and, you know, actual felt backlash in reality for politicians in Ireland. I feel like it doesn't matter how much people say online, they're still able, they'll come out and say something even madder the following week. Whereas in another country, they might sort of be suitably chastened by the public's distaste for their expressed sentiment. But anyway, the other thing that struck me about this was this sort of continuous misunderstanding of how algorithms work. I mean, it doesn't surprise me given that clearly they're only finding out what a VPN is in sort of the days surrounding this. But algorithms already show people.
Sorry, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but Peter Chapclear strikes me as the kind of person who would try to download more RAM for his computer.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, this is the caliber of sort of this thinker you're dealing with here. But I think that in relation, gosh, what the hell was I? What was the point I was making? It was about.
Sorry, no, I derailed you there.
You did, Jay. Now I look like the same caliber of thinker that we're criticizing here. No, I was speaking about, algorithms and how they work, about how there's a continuous sort of assumption that people's algorithms are like not a response to what people want to see. I mean, I think the whole thing about algorithms is that they're hyper responsive to what you want to see. Like if you're clicking into certain kinds of content, the algorithm, these recommender algorithms, obviously we don't know their exact inner workings, but I feel like a lot of these people they seem to pretend there's a lot more going on behind the scenes than there is, simply because the reality doesn't support the sort of rhetoric that they're making or the sort of picture that they're trying to paint for the public. So in reality, the way these, because these algorithms just want to keep you on the app, they want to keep your attention. So they show you the things that you seem to show interest in, and they show you more extreme versions of those things. So like on X, you know, if you're dissatisfied, you'll be getting sort of, you know, posts from Radio Genoa, I'm sure, and Cat Turd and whoever it might happen to be, because obviously these sort of slop accounts dominate. I don't think those are good. I don't think those are of quality. But nevertheless, you know, that's just the way it works. And everyone has sort of a low level of awareness that that's the way it works. Whereas these people seem to think that...
Unfortunately, if you go to Twitter and you open your For You page and you're interested in like Irish politics, you are going to see like lame accounts like Jason Osborne _GM, you know, that kind of thing will come up, and
yeah
you just scroll past it and it's annoying. You might click like not interested, but it's going to come up again, and like that's just, you have to factor that in when you use social media, is you're going to see garbage.
The algorithm has completely left me behind on X because I haven't been posting lately and I don't pay for the premium subscription, so I despite having like 2,200 followers, which obviously isn't many compared to you, but it's not nothing. I posted a tweet earlier and it was only seen by 50 people. It's like, that is some serious throttling going on there. But anyway, I choose not to pay for the subscription. I'll keep my complaints to myself. But the point I'm trying to make is that they always have this assumption that like, oh, you know, these algorithms are just frothing at the mouth, looking to push right-wing divisive content on people. And they never face up to the fact that people are generally just, you know, on say X or on other mainly political platforms, people are looking at extreme content, and therefore they're being, not even extreme content, they're looking at political content, and therefore they're being sort of offered more extreme political content, or not even more extreme, just sort of political content in the same vein. And they don't like that. They would much rather, you know, if you're looking at this stuff, you'll then turn around to be offered, you know, Sinead Gibney's 5-point plan for Gaza or something like this. They ultimately don't understand how algorithms work, and they would much rather they just work those to show people what they want them to see.
And, so, and the sad part is, I mean, we obviously the concern and what Gibney seemed to be saying was that they would push politicians' agenda effectively, which is obviously dangerous and insidious. But I think there'd also be a move towards just promoting banal, bland garbage. Like, it's not political one way or the other. It's just extremely lame. And I think you've seen some of that with YouTube, where I don't think a lot of people understand. And by the way, by me even saying what I'm about to say, this video is going to get restricted and get less views than it otherwise would. So I'll try to speak in slightly.
Nice excuse for our low viewer count.
yeah, I mean, just coping in advance. But I'll try and use coded language here. If you discuss the termination of pregnancy, shall we say, whether you're for it or you're against it, it doesn't matter what your position on that particular issue is, your video will automatically get less views and be pushed down in the algorithm, because they don't want their advertisements to show up on controversial videos that are talking about contentious stuff. So if you're talking about wars or violence or very controversial social matters that people have strong opinions on one way or the other, it doesn't matter what you're saying about it. The algorithm doesn't like that. So but those are important conversations that need to be had. So if you're doing a stupid video of a cat playing the kazoo, there's no problem there, because that's advertiser friendly. So the point is, it's not even political. Now, I'm not saying YouTube isn't political. I'm sure if you're right wing, you get into more trouble than if you're left wing. You know, like, I'm guessing there is a political component to it as well. But what I'm saying is, just political content across the board, whether you're a communist or a libertarian or whatever, they just don't want you talking about anything controversial like that. And that just ruins the platform in and of itself, you know? And I think a lot of politicians do the same thing to other social media platforms if they could get their way with it.
Yeah, I was just about to make that point. Yeah, I think they would try to sweep that across the different platforms if they could. This is a complete tangent, but speaking of YouTube and the sort of what is being recommended to people, I saw a post there the other day, someone curious as to what's recommended to people if they have a blank slate YouTube account now, because the internet has changed so much in recent years. And like, this is a completely different topic altogether, but I mean, it's also a valid thing to discuss, which is that the quality of the internet has declined substantially. And AI definitely is somewhat responsible for that, because, for example, what this sort of, to put it this way, Virgin profile was being recommended was, you know, top 5 Sora AI cat videos, video of, we've all seen them on social media, like AI generated images of, yeah, like cats playing the trumpet, walking up to a front door or something like this. You know, Roblox videos, Twitch
KSI.
You're showing your age there, even with that. KSI is old news. It's all iShow Speed and Asmund Gold and all these guys. KSI was our school days, I think. But it's just like, a lot of the stuff that's being recommended is, you get to use the word, absolute slop and trash. But nevertheless, that's what people want to watch, and that's what they're clicking into. So that's why this stuff is recommended, and it's also why that's what people are showing on different platforms, not just YouTube. But
engineer the algorithm so that when you log on to YouTube, every single video is just a gripped video, specifically one with my face in it.
So that's what we would do. Yeah, exactly. You with the Mr. Beast open map pointing behind you thumbnail.
Soy facing at a picture of like a new government bill or something.
But just that's what I'll make on this, is that all of the government issues with tech are inherently political. They're not happy with the content people are being shown on it. Not necessarily people have a right to look at this stuff. I mean, they're taking issue with a lot of the political content people are saying that's divisive and that's what's raising the temperature. And they're attributing a lot of that to algorithms when really that's just showing people what they want to see, and there's nothing illegal in that. Ultimately, what they want is a sort of happy clappy world where everyone just sort of accepts the mainstream political line in Ireland, or the sort of the what the government would have the Overton window be, and they would have the algorithms recommend that stuff instead. And that is deeply totalitarian. Yep. And they feel so comfortable saying that on a publicly available, publicly broadcasted Oireachtas committee is quite some indication of where the political discourse in the country remains.
Yeah, most definitely. And I suppose with that said, we might move on to our final topic. We've only got a couple of minutes left, but we might touch on it. Again, I keep almost calling him Elon Burke. Enoch Burke's rearrest, which everyone saw coming, including the judge and including Enoch Burke himself, because when he was released last week, I believe it was 5 days ago as of the recording of this video, the judge said to him, "Now I'm releasing you temporarily on the condition that you don't go back to Wilson's Hospital School." And Enoch Burke said, "I will go back to the school because that's where I work." And the judge said, and I quote, "Mr. Burke, you have an unparalleled ability to shoot yourself in the foot." And I mean, it's kind of hard to argue with that. He's shot himself in the foot so many times, he's digging a hole. Like, there's no feet left. There's just stumps at this stage. Mag dumping with an extended clip. Because, and this is going to be controversial to say, you know, people are going to get annoyed because people are very supportive, as am I, of his stand on the gender issue. My issue is not with his gender stand. My issue is the fact that he's kind of like what we were talking about with Trump, totally ineffective in his way of going about it. Because if he had gone to court and hired a good lawyer and made this a legal issue, it would have been very winnable. He would have won legal precedent. It would have set a whole standard as far as the way the gender issue is approached within employment settings. It would have been hugely beneficial culturally, legally, and otherwise to people who believe in sanity on the gender issue. And instead, by violating court orders, not complying with the way the basic legal system works, he's made it the entire thing kind of a circus and an absurd clown show that means that he's getting arrested every 5 minutes. He's in jail for contempt of court when he doesn't need to be. He could be out there arguing the case with a legal team behind him, and you know, many people would chip in to support him in that. And it's just a complete wasted opportunity where now the focus is on this sideshow of a guy who keeps getting arrested every 25 minutes. I just think it's really just a squandered chance. Like, you think about martyrdom and being willing to be martyred. Great martyrs in history didn't want to be killed. They're willing to, or jailed, or persecuted in some way. They're willing to have all that happen if it comes to that. But St. Paul, when he got arrested by the Romans, he was invoking his rights as a Roman citizen, and he was arguing the case for why he should be removed. He didn't want to get beheaded, but he did.
And he was trying to keep the focus on the issue the whole time as well. He was writing letters. He was continuously preaching.
And similarly, I mean, he's a Catholic saint, but Saint Thomas More, he was executed by King Henry VIII because Henry VIII wanted to get a divorce, and that's obviously opposed to Catholic faith, so he wouldn't go along with that. But Thomas More tried everything he could. He pored over all the legal information he could find to see, was there some loophole where he could, because basically he would have had to swear an oath that would involve him violating his faith, and he wasn't willing to do that, and so the punishment for that was going to be death. But he was trying to find some kind of loophole where he could both satisfy the king and not violate his principles. Now, ultimately, he couldn't find it, and he ended up saying, "Fine, I'll go against the king," and then he got beheaded. But he wasn't setting out to try and get beheaded. He was trying, if at all possible, to avoid that outcome. And so it seems like this story has just become a guy who's like determined to self-destruct. So that's what it looks like, right?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I was just pulling up something here while we were talking. He has so much ammunition he could have focused on here, but as you say, he sort of, because he has a lot of support on the gender issue, and understandably so. I mean, it's crazy stuff. And there was even, you know, while we're having the sort of latest iteration of the legal circus surrounding all of this, there was a development that if he was really laser focused on the issue in recent days, he could have focused on, it seems to me, to great profit, which was the Irish Times reported about it on Friday, which is this new guide from the Irish Council for Civil Liberties. They published a rights guide, to put it that way, which is something, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, it's something like Know Your Rights, a guide for trans and non-binary people or something like this. And so the ICCL published this last week with the support of the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission. So a lot of sort of background state support behind this. And I've opened it here, I pulled it up. There's a section in it where this is pertinent to Enoch Burke's case. There's a section in it where it says, do I have a right to have my correct name and pronoun used in school? And by correct, they mean preferred. You know, if a boy thinks he's a girl, I mean, does he have a right to be called by his sort of chosen female name and she, her pronouns? And there is, it says, according to Department of Education guidelines, your school must make every effort to update your name and pronoun in relevant systems and documents. It must also use your correct name and pronoun in day-to-day interactions. You should clarify with the school what your preferences are for your name and pronoun usage in written communications to your parents or guardians. Now, he obviously, you know, when he is asked about it, says this is what the whole thing is about. But you could be forgiven for forgetting that in the midst of his, you know, arguments with judges, or if something like that drops out in the middle of, you know, just the middle of the news cycle, which seems directly pertinent to his case and what he's claiming it all started over, and it goes by without comment. I mean, it seems crazy to me that you've got to get a document that just sort of underlyingly has state support, in which they're saying your school must also, and this is the quote, must also use your correct name and pronoun in day-to-day interactions. So there you go. It's like, well, if you're a teacher who doesn't agree with this, where does that leave you?
Yeah.
Having to call a boy, you know, having to refer to a boy as her, if the boy comes to you and says that he's, if Jack comes to you and says he's going by Jacinta now, do you have to refer to him that way, even if it goes against your belief system? Is that this document, because the department obviously isn't in a rush to clarify this despite inquiries, this document would very much imply that yes, that is the case. So I think Enoch has, again, referred to shooting himself in the foot, has shot himself in the foot by not being more issue focused.
And I would also point out, if people are saying, oh, why are you criticizing Elon Burke? Like, aren't there people who are more worthy?
Enoch Burke.
Did I say it again?
You said Elon Burke.
again. I'm not doing that on purpose, genuinely. It's become a running joke in my house since... Anyway, look, that's... apologies. Enoch Burke. Just to be clear, not that it's a personal issue. I don't care about this personally. But I will say that I remember myself and John McGurk and a few others being called out by name by Burke and Mammy Burke, and they had a whole video before the presidential election. I'm not sure if you remember that, where they were saying, they were basically like heavily criticizing the idea that people should spoil their vote and that people should instead vote for Heather Humphreys, which I just found amazing, because nobody can deny that Enoch Burke is extremely principled and somebody who clearly believes strongly in his convictions. Obviously, like, look at him and everything that he's done and his general mission that he set for himself. All of that is admirable and fine. But I don't understand how this guy is willing to be tortured for weeks in a POW camp if it came to that. Like, you genuinely get that sense. And then he turns around and votes for Fine Gael. And not only a Fine Gael candidate, but a Fine Gael candidate who signed Barbie Kardashian's gender recognition cert. When Heather Humphreys was the social protection minister, it was under her tenure that Barbie Kardashian was considered legally female and then subsequently put into a woman's prison. And the Burke family apparently voted for this individual to become president of Ireland. I just find that unfathomable and bizarre. And again, it kind of, to me, indicates a kind of a contrarianism that is self-defeating. But, going against the spoil your vote movement in a very strident and aggressive, unwarranted way was just bizarre on the eve of the election. So anyway, I didn't want to bring it.
Would have been very funny. It would have been very funny if the Humphreys campaign had used that as an endorsement.
Well, yeah, I'm surprised it didn't work. Frankly, that was the most surprising part of the election to me, was that didn't seem to pan out. But
in an attempt to appeal to voters who otherwise wouldn't vote for Fine Gael or Heather Humphreys. But yeah, I mean, it's so long running now that I think there's difficulties on every side, but I think that the difficulty Enoch Burke faces is that, yeah, essentially the central issue for many people has been lost in the midst of the sort of chaotic scenes that have come out of courtrooms and outside the school. And I think that, yes, not even for us, some people might take issue with us sort of thing, to give him advice as the man in the arena, to put it that way. But I do think that, just as a basic analysis, certainly the issue of pronouns in schools is a live one and is real, and is one that has the potential to affect teachers and schools, especially obviously those who don't agree with this gender ideology. And there's lots and lots and lots of opportunity to keep that front and center that seems to be going uncommented upon and passed up. So from Enoch Burke's perspective, missed opportunities, perhaps.
Yeah, from the perspective of everyone who is concerned about this issue, because it's, he would have had huge potential and still has maybe huge potential to bring a lot of light to this issue in a way that is serious and productive, rather than just creating a big spectacle and a couple of headlines, and then you waste your life rotting away in a jail cell for no good reason and no benefit to anybody, you know? But with that said, I suppose we will leave our wonderful viewers there for another episode of the Long Game Podcast. God bless.
God bless.